Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Whip Hand by William W. Johnstone and J. A. Johnstone. Narrated by Al Kessel. Chapter 1. Hunter Buchanan whipped his hand to the big Lamette revolver jutting from the holster, around which the shell belt was coiled on the ground beside him. In a half second, the big revolver was out of its holster, and Hunter heard the hammer click back before he even knew what his thumb was doing. Lightning-quick action honed by time and experience, including 4 bloody years during which he fought for the Confederacy in the War of Northern Aggression. He didn't know what had prompted his instinctive action until he sat half up from his saddle and peered across the red glowing coals of the dying campfire to see Bobby Lee sitting nearby, peering down the slope into the southern darkness beyond, the coyote's tail curled tightly, ears pricked. Hunter's pet coyote gave another half-moan, half-growl, like the one Hunter had heard in his sleep, and shifted his weight from one foot to the other. Hunter sat up slowly.
"What is it, Bobby?"
A startled gasp sounded beside Hunter, and in the corner of his left eye he saw his wife Annabelle sit up quickly, grabbing her own hog leg from its holster and clicking the hammer back. Umber light from the fire danced in her thick red hair.
"What is it?" she whispered.
"Don't rightly know,"
Hunter said tightly, quietly.
"But something's put a burr in Bobby's bonnet."
Down the slope behind Hunter, Annabelle and Bobby Lee, their 12 horses wickered uneasily, drawing on their picket lines.
"Something's got the horses' blood up, too,"
Annabelle remarked, glancing over her shoulder at the fidgety mounts.
"Stay with the horses, honey,"
Hunter said, tossing his bedroll aside, then rising, donning a Stetson, and stepping into his boots. As he grabbed his Henry repeating rifle, Annabelle said,
"You be careful. We might have horse thieves on our hands, Hunter."
"Don't I know it?"
Hunter jacked around into the Henry's action, then strode around the nearly dead fire, brushing fingers across the top of the coyote's head and starting down the hill to the south.
"Come on, Bobby."
The coyote didn't need to be told twice. If there was one place for Bobby Lee, that was by the side of the big blonde man who'd adopted him when his mother had been killed by a rancher several years ago. Hunter moved slowly down the forested slope in the half-darkness, one hand around the Henry's receiver so starlight didn't reflect off the brass and give him away. Bobby Lee ran ahead, scouting for any human polecats after the 10 horses Hunter and Annabelle were herding from their ranch near Tigerville, deep in the Black Hills, to a ranch outside of Denver. Hunter and Annabelle had caught the wild mustangs in the hills near their ranch, and Annabelle had sat on the fence of the breaking corral, Bobby Lee near her feet, watching as Hunter had broken each wild-eyed bronc in turn. Gentled them, rather. Hunter didn't believe in breaking a horse's spirit. He just wanted to turn them into plug ponies, good ranch mounts that answered to the slightest tug on the reins or a squeeze of a rider's knees, and could turn on a dime, which was often necessary when working cattle, especially dangerous mavericks. Hunter and Annabelle needed the money from the horse sale to help make up for the loss of several head of cattle to a rogue grizzly the previous summer. Times were hard on the ranch due to drought and low stock prices, and they were afraid they'd lose the Boxbar B without the money from the horses. They were getting $200 a head because they were prime mounts. Hunter had a reputation as one of the best horse gentlers on the northern frontier, and that money would go far toward helping them keep the ranch. Hunter wanted desperately to keep the Boxbar B, not only for himself and Annabelle, but for Hunter's aged father, Angus. The boy they've adopted when Nathan's doxy mother had died after riding with would-be rustlers, including the boy's scoundrel father, whom Hunter had killed. The boy was nothing like his father. He was good and hard-working, and he needed a good home. Hunter moved off down the slope, but stopped when Bobby Lee suddenly took off running and swinging left toward some rocks and a cedar thicket, growling. The coyote disappeared in the trees and brush, and then started barking angrily. A man cursed, and then there were three rocketing gun reports, followed by Bobby's mewling howl.
"Damn coyote!" the man's voice called out.
"Bobby," Hunter said, and took off running in the direction in which Bobby Lee had disappeared.
"They know we're here now, so be careful,"
another man called out sharply. Running footsteps sounded ahead of Hunter. He stopped and dropped to a knee when a moving shadow appeared ahead of him and slightly down the slope. Starlight glinted off a rifle barrel and off the running man's cream Stetson.
"Hold it right there, you horse thief,"
Hunter bellowed, pressing his cheek to the Henry's stock. The man stopped suddenly and swung his rifle toward Hunter. The Henry spoke once, twice, three times. The man grunted and flew backward, dropping his rifle and striking the ground with another grunt and a thud.
"Harvey!"
the other man yelled from beyond the rocks and cedars. Harvey yelled in a screeching voice filled with pain.
"I'm a dead man, Buck. Buchanan got me, the rebel devil. He's over here. Get him for me."
Hunter stepped behind a pine, peered out around it, and jacked another round into the Henry's action. He waited, pricking his ears, listening for the approach of Buck. Seconds passed, then a minute, then 2 minutes. A figure appeared on the right side of the rocks and cedars, moving slowly, one step at a time. Buck held a carbine across his chest. Hunter lined up the Henry's sights on the man and was about to squeeze the trigger when something ran up behind the man and leaped onto his back. Buck screamed as he fell forward, Bobby Lee growling fiercely and tearing into the back of the man's neck. Hunter smiled. Buck screamed as he tried in vain to fight off the fiercely protective Bobby Lee. Buck swung around suddenly and cursed loudly as he flung Bobby Lee off him. The coyote struck the ground with a yelp and rolled.
"You mangy cur!"
Buck bellowed, drawing a pistol and aiming at Bobby. Hunter's Henry spoke twice, flames lapping from the barrel. Buck groaned and lay over on his back.
"Oh, hell,"
he said, and died.
"Good work, Bobby,"
Hunter said, walking toward where the coyote was climbing to his feet. Hunter dropped to a knee, placed his hand on Bobby Lee's back.
"You all right?"
The coyote shook himself as if in an affirmative reply.
"All right," Hunter said, straightening. "Let's go check on."
The shrill whinny of horses cut through the silence that had fallen over the night after Hunter had shot Buck.
"Annabelle!"
Hunter yelled, swinging around to retrace his route back to the camp.
"Come on, Bobby. There must be more of these scoundrels."
The coyote mewled and took off running ahead of Hunter. Only a minute after Hunter and Bobby had left the camp, the horses stirred more vigorously behind where Annabelle sat on a log near the cold fire, her Winchester carbine resting across her denim-clad thighs. She'd just risen from the log and started to walk toward the string of prize mounts when a man's voice called from the darkness down the hill behind the horses.
"Come here, pretty little red-headed gal."
The voice was pitched with jeering, brash mockery. Annabelle froze, stared into the darkness. Anger rose in her. Again, the man's voice caromed quietly out of the darkness.
"Come here, pretty little red-headed gal."
The man chuckled. Several of the horses lifted their heads and gave shrill whinnies. The flame of anger burned more brightly in Annabelle, her heart quickening, her gloved hands tightening around the carbine she held high across her chest. She knew she shouldn't do it, but she couldn't stop herself. She moved slowly forward. Ahead and to her left, 30 feet away, the horses were wickering and shifting, pulling at the ropes securing them to the picket line. Annabelle jacked around into the carbine's action and moved toward the horses. She patted the blaze on the snout of a handsome black and said,
"Easy, fellas, easy. I got this."
She stepped around the horses and down the slope and stopped behind a broad, bold pine. Again, the man's infuriating voice came from down the slope beyond her.
Come here, pretty little red-haired gal. Come find me.
Annabelle swallowed tightly and said quietly, mostly to herself,
All right, if you're sure about this, bucko.
She continued forward, taking one step at a time. She had no spurs on her boots. Hunter's horses were so well trained they didn't require them. She made virtually no sound as she continued down the slope, weaving among the columnar pines and firs silhouetted against the night's darkness, relieved only by starlight.
Come on, pretty little red-headed gal, came the jeering voice again. Want to show you something?
Oh, you do you? Annabelle muttered beneath her breath. Wonder what that could be.
She headed in the direction from which the voice had come, practically directly ahead of her now, maybe 30-40 feet down the slope. On the one hand, that she was being lured into a trap, there could be no question. Hunter had always told her that her red-headed anger would get the best of her one day. Maybe he'd been right. On the other hand, the open mockery in the voice of the man trying to lure her into the trap could not be denied. She imagined shooting him, and the thought stretched her rich red lips back from her perfect white teeth in a savage smile. She took one step, then another, pausing briefly behind trees, edging cautious looks around them, knowing that she could see the lap of flames from a gun barrel at any second.
That's it, came the man's voice again. Just a bit closer, honey. That's it. Keep coming, pretty little red-headed gal.
All right, Annabelle said tightly, loudly enough for the man to hear her now. But you're gonna regret it, you son of a b—
She smelled the rancid odor of unwashed man and raw whiskey 2 seconds before she heard the pine needle crunch of a stealthy tread behind her. She froze as a man's body pressed against her from behind. Just as the man started to wrap his arm around her, intending to close his hand over her mouth, Annabelle ducked and swung around, swinging the carbine as well, and rammed the butt into her would-be assailant's solar plexus. The man gave a great exhalation of whiskey-soaked breath and folded. Annabelle turned farther and rammed her knee right into the man's face. She felt the wetness of blood on her knee from the man's exploding nose. He gave a wheezy,
Mercy!
As he fell straight back against the ground and lay moaning and writhing. Knowing she was about to have lead sent her way, Annabelle threw herself to her left and rolled. Sure enough, the rifle of the man on the slope below thundered once, twice, three times, the bullets caroming through the air where Annabelle had been a second before. The man whom she'd taken to the proverbial woodshed howled, apparently having taken one of the bullets meant for her. Annabelle rolled onto her belly and aimed the carbine straight out before her. She'd seen the flash of the second man's rifle, and she aimed toward him now, sending 3 quick shots his way. The second shooter howled. Annabelle heard the heavy thud as he struck the ground.
"Gal blast it!" he cried. "You like to shot my dang ear off, you wicked red-haired hussy!"
"What happened to pretty little red-haired gal?"
Annabelle spat out as she shoved to her feet and righted her Stetson. She heard the second shooter thrashing around down the slope, jostling the branches of an evergreen shrub. He gave another cry, and then Annabelle could hear him running in a shambling fashion downhill.
"Oh, you're running away from the pretty little red-haired gal now, tough guy?"
Anna strode after him, following the sounds of his shambling retreat. She pushed through the shrubs and saw his shadow moving downhill, holding a hand to his right ear, groaning. He'd left his rifle up where Anna had shot him.
"Turn around or take it in the back, tough guy," she said, following him, taking long, purposeful strides.
"You're crazy!"
the man cried, casting a fearful glance behind him.
"What'd you do to H.J.?"
"What I started, you finished."
"He's my cousin!"
"Was your cousin."
He gave another sobbing cry as he continued running so awkwardly that Anna, walking, steadily gained on him as she held the carbine down low against her right leg.
"You're just evil is what you are."
"You were after our horses, I take it?" The man only sobbed again. "How'd you get on our trail?"
"Seen you passing wide around Lusk,"
the man said, breathless, grunting.
We was hunting antelope on the ridge."
"Market hunters?"
For a woodcutting crew."
"Ah, you figured you'd make more money selling my and my husband's horses. At least you have a good eye for horse flesh." The man gained the bottom of the ridge. He stopped and turned to see Anna moving within 20 feet of him, gaining on him steadily. A tall, slender, well-put-together young lady outfitted in men's trail gear. Though, judging by all her curves in all the right places, she was all woman. He gave another wail, moonlight glinting in his wide, terrified eyes, then swung around and ran into the creek, the water splashing like quicksilver up around his knees. He'd likely never been stalked by a woman before, especially no pretty little red-headed gal. Anna followed the coward into the creek. "What's your name?"
"Oh, go to hell!"
"What's your name?" He shot another silver-eyed gaze back over his shoulder.
"Wally! Leave me be! I'm in major pain here!"
Now that Anna was closing on him, she could see the man was tall and slender, mid to late 20s, with long stringy hair brushing his shoulders while the top of his head was bald. He had small, mean eyes, and now as he turned to face her, he lowered his bloody right hand to the pistol bristling on his right hip.
"You stop right there now,"
he warned, stretching his lips back from his teeth in pain.
"You stop there. I'm done. Finished. You go back to your camp."
Anna stopped 10 feet away from him. She rested the Winchester on her shoulder. "You know what happens to rustlers in these parts, don't you, Wally?" He thrust his left arm and index finger out at her.
Now, you ain't gonna hang me. You done blowed my ear off."
Wally slid the old Smith & Wesson from its holster and held it straight down against his right leg.
Besides, you're a woman. Women don't behave like that."
He clicked the smithy's hammer back. "You're right. We don't behave like that." Anna racked a fresh round into the carbine's action, raised the rifle to her shoulder, and grinned coldly. "Why waste the hemp on vermin like you, Wally?" Wally's little eyes grew wide in terror as he jerked his pistol up.
"Don't you—"
"We just shoot him," Anna said, and shot him. Wally flew back into the creek with a splash. He went under and bobbed to the surface, arms and legs spread wide. Slowly, the current carried him downstream. Anna heard running footsteps and the man's raking breaths behind her. She swung around, bringing the carbine up again, ready to shoot, but held fire when she saw the big, broad-shouldered man in the gray Stetson, buckskin tunic and denims running toward her, the coyote running just ahead.
"Anna!"
Hunter yelled. "Are you all right, honey?" He and Bobby stopped at the edge of the stream. Both their gazes caught on the man bobbing downstream, and Hunter shuttled his incredulous gaze back to his wife. Waking deep breaths, he hooked a thumb over his shoulder.
"So the other man up the hill, dead as a post."
Hunter Buchanan planted his fists on his hips and scowled his reproof at his young wife.
"I told you to stay at the camp."
Anna strode back out of the stream. She stopped before her husband, who was a whole head taller than she. "We pretty little red-headed gals just need us a little bloodletting once in a while, sort of like bleeding the sap off a tree." She grinned, rose up on her toes to kiss Hunter's lips, then ticked the brim of his hat with her right index finger and started walking back toward the camp and the horses. "Come on, Bobby Lee," she said. "I'll race ya." Chapter 2. The next day, late in the afternoon, Hunter had a strange sense of foreboding as he rode into the Arapaho Creek headquarters. He stopped his horse just inside the wooden portal in the overhead crossbar, of which the Arapaho Creek brand, AC, had been burned. He curveted his fine Gruyot stallion, Nasty Pete, and took a quick study of the place. The house sat off to the right, and just ahead of him, a large 2.5-story stone and log affair. A large field stone hearth ran up the lodge's near wall, shaded by a large dusty cottonwood, its leaves flashing silver in the breeze blowing in from the bastion of the Rocky Mountain Front Range, rising in the west. A couple of log barns and a stable, as well as a windmill and blacksmith shop, sat ahead on Hunter's left, beyond a large corral. The wooden blades of the windmill creaked in the wind, and that hot, dry, vagrant breeze kicked up finely churned dirt and horse apples in the yard just ahead of him. They made a mini, short-lived tornado out of them. The breeze brought to Hunter's nostrils the pungent tang of sage and horse manure. Likely impressive at one time, the place had a time-worn look. Brush grew up around the house and most of the outbuildings. Rusted tin washtubs hung from nails in the front wall of the bunkhouse. Also, there were few men working around the headquarters. Hunter spotted only four. Only one was actually working. A big burly man in a leather apron, likely the blacksmith, was greasing the axle of a dilapidated supply wagon, and the AC brand painted on both sides badly faded. One man sat on the corral fence to Hunter's left, rolling a sharpened matchstick from one corner of his mouth to the other with a desultory air. Two others sat outside the bunkhouse between the stable and the windmill, straddling a bench and playing two-handed poker. Of course, most of the hands could be out on the range, tending herds, but Hunter had spied few cattle after he, Annabelle, and the 10 horses they would sell here had ridden onto Navajo Creek Grays, roughly 20 miles north of Denver, near a little town called Javelina. The Grays itself was sparse. It was a motley-looking country under a broad blue bowl of sky, from which the sun hammered down relentlessly. It was all bunch grass and sage, a few cedars here and there peppering low, chalky buttes and meandering dry arroyos. It was indeed a big, broad, open country with damn few trees, the first front of the Rocky Mountains cropping up in the west, some of the highest peaks showing the ermine of the previous winter snow. This dry, dun-brown country lay in grim contrast to those high, formidable ridges that bespoke deep, lush pine forests and roaring creeks and rivers. What also appeared odd was that 3 of the 4 men Hunter could see appeared old, late 50s to mid-60s. Only the man sitting with his boot heels hooked over a corral slot to Hunter's left appeared under 40. He regarded Hunter blandly from beneath the weathered, funneled brim of his once-cream Stetson that was now, after enduring much sun, wind, rain, and hail of this harsh country, a washed-out yellow. The man slid his gaze from Hunter to the main house and said tonelessly,
"Looks like the horses are here, boss."
Hunter followed the man's gaze toward where an old man with thin, gray, curly hair and a long gray tangle of beard stood on the house's front porch. He had to be somewhere in his late 60s, hard-earned years judging by the man's slump and general air of fragility. He appeared to be carrying a great weight and was damned weary of it. He wore wash-worn broadcloth trousers, a thin cream long-handled top, and suspenders. He squinted at Hunter, his bony features long and drawn. He looked as though he might have just woken from a nap.
"Hunter Buchanan?"
the man called raspily.
"Rufus Scanlon?" Hunter countered.
The man dipped his chin, his long beard brushing his flat, bony chest.
"We have the horses up on the ridge," Hunter said, hooking a thumb to indicate the low, pine-peppered ridge behind him. "I rode down to see if you were ready for 'em."
He glanced into the corral where only 3 horses stood still as stone, save twitching their tails at flies, hang-headed, regarding the newcomer dubiously. The man beckoned broadly with a thin arm, his lips spread an eager smile, giving sudden life to the otherwise lifeless tangle of beard.
"Bring 'em down!" Hunter glanced around the yard once more. He was selling his prized horses for $200 apiece. He had a hard time reconciling such a price with such a humble-looking headquarters. He hoped he and Dana hadn't ridden all this way for nothing.
"All right, then," he said.
He neck-reined Nasty Pete around and galloped back out through the portal. He followed the trail across Navajo Creek and up to the crest of the ridge where Anna was holding the horses and scattered pines. They stood spread out, calmly grazing, Anna sitting on her calico mare Ruthie among them. When they'd stopped here on the ridge, Bobby Lee had disappeared. Likely sensing they'd come to the end of the trail, the coyote had lit out on a rabbit or gopher hunt. Seeing Hunter, Anna booted the mare over to him, frowning incredulously beneath the brim of her dark green Stetson, its horsehair thong drawn up securely beneath her chin. The Rocky Mountain sun glinted fetchingly in her deep red hair.
"What is it?"
she asked, the mare nuzzling Nasty Pete with teasing affection.
"What's what?"
"I know that look. What's wrong?"
Hunter shrugged and leaned forward against his saddle horn.
"Not sure. Humble place, the Arapaho Creek. Doesn't look like the kind of outfit that can afford these horses.
I told Scanlon in my letter that this was a cash deal only. That's $2,000. Just a mite skeptical that old man down there has $2,000 laying around, lonely and in need of a home."
The big ex-Confederate gave his wife a pointed look.
"I'll guarantee you, though, I'm not going home without the cash he agreed to pay, or without the horses he agreed to buy if he can't buy 'em."
"You should have had him put cash down."
"Yeah, well, I've never had to do that before."
"That's because you've always known the men you were selling to."
Hunter sighed and raked a thumb through a 2-day growth of blonde beard stubble.
"I gotta admit, I ain't the shrewdest businessman."
"No, you're not. You're a simple, honest ex-rebel from Georgia."
Anna sidled Ruthie up next to Nasty Pete, thumbed Hunter's hat up on his forehead, and kissed him.
"And that's why this Yankee girl loves you. Not sure I could have fallen in love with a shrewd businessman. My father was one of those."
Hunter smiled. Annabelle frowned with sudden concern.
"You don't think he might try to take them from us, do you? The horses?"
Hunter shook his head.
"Doesn't seem the type. Besides, not enough men around. And those who are, all but one, don't look like they could raise a hog leg. Nah, he's probably one of those tight Yankees who let his place go to pot because he was too cheap to hire the men to keep it up. He probably has a mattress stuffed with money somewhere in that old house. He's likely ready to spend some of that cash on horses, maybe to try to build up his own remuda. Hope so, anyways."
Hunter glanced around, again seeing no sign of a herd.
"Looks like he might be out of the cattle business."
Anna straightened in her saddle.
"Let's go see. With any luck, we'll be in Javelina by sundown, flush as railroad magnates and sitting down to a big surrounding of steak and beans."
"Mrs. Buchanan, you are indeed a lady after my own heart."
"Oh, I think you've known for a while now that you have that, dear heart."
Anna narrowed an eye at him and hooked her mouth in a crooked smile, jade eyes shimmering in the late afternoon light.
"Lock, stock, and barrel."
She started to rein her calico around, saying,
"Let's go drive these broomtails down to—"
Hunter touched her arm.
"Hold on."
She turned back to him, frowning.
"What is it?"
"Whatever happens down there."
He gave her a commanding look and jerked his chin to indicate the humble headquarters at the base of the ridge.
"Don't go off half-cocked like you did last night."
"Oh, I went off fully cocked last night, dear heart."
"Anna."
But she'd already reined away from him and was working Ruthie around to the far side of the herd. Hunter stared after her, shaking his head in frustration. But wasn't it his own damn fault, letting himself tumble for a fiery Yankee girl, a redhead spawned and reared by the equally stubborn and warrior-like Yankee Black Hills rancher Graham Ludlow, who'd become Hunter's blood enemy when the man had tried to keep his prized daughter from marrying into the Confederate Buchanan family. In fact, the two families had nearly destroyed each other in the feud that had followed.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?